Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. Every Wednesday of the year, except for Christmas this year, we did not do a show. But for the last 2 years, we have hosted American Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. That's the letter U, the letter R, 10S Network, the number 10 and S. You can get the show every week on your iPhone just by going to the podcast there, the iTunes, the podcast, or log on to Blog Talk Radio, and you can get each and every show of the UR Tennis Network. Punch on UR Tennis Network, and you can get shows. Parenting Aces every Monday with Lisa Stone has been a great show. It's been going the full time of the UR Tennis Network every Monday at noon. Also, Jason Haynes has college coaches on just about every Wednesday as well. 2 hours from right now, 2 o'clock Eastern Time, also on the UR Tennis Network. Great shows every week addressing issues about tennis in the United States. And we're talking about American tennis here. And as you know, each week I tell everyone to your job is to stand up and to speak out. And we don't need to be timid and just talk about cliches and facts and all the political correct stuff. Let's talk out about the issues that are important to you. And we ask you to be professional, address issues, not people, and no one can find fault with that. I always remind you that this is the United States of America. You have a First Amendment right, and also you have an absolute privilege and a right, but we also, this is our duty to speak out and to say those things that we need to say. Edmund Burke says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. And our job is to speak out. And I want to try to remind each and every person that listens to the show of that. And I don't know why people are just getting so wimpy and they're afraid of offending everybody. Everybody's so sensitive. And daggone it, I'm at a place right now in Charleston, South Carolina, at the Citadel. I'm so proud to be here. And they preach that it is more important what happens in you than what happens to you all the time. And the life is not set up to just give you a nice time and comfort. Comfort bears no fruit. It's more important that you take whatever's given you and you make good things from it. So with that, we're ready to get going with today's show, and we have a great guest and probably the most popular, I don't know if popular is it, maybe most successful, because Brian, you popularity is different than, along with success comes a lot of bullseye on your back, and popularity is not the same thing as power, we know that, and power does not always mean excellence. But Brian Bolin, welcome to the show here, American Tennis, and it's great to have you on. Thanks for being on today.
Well, thank you, Chuck, and it's great to have an opportunity to speak with you, and please know how much I speak on behalf of so many people in America, how much you've done for the sport and how many people you've touched through the great tool of tennis and what it's meant to so many that you've been involved in. I agree with what you said. We have a tremendous I think obligation to speak out and to let each other know how we what we believe and how we feel. We can all agree to disagree, and I think that's what makes things happen.
Well, great. And today, if you want to call in to talk with Brian, call area code 714-583-6853. 714-583-6853. Usually second half of the show will do this. I wanted to tell you also that ChuckCreasy.net, we have all of the former shows of the American Tennis shows over the past 2 years, and we have got some great guests that we've had on there. But go to ChuckCreasy.net. You can also get my camps and that other stuff here. But, Brian, man, I paged through your, 15-page resume here this morning from only the last 12 or 13 years. And, Brian, believe it or not, I was aware of you before you went to the University of Virginia, because one of my favorite people I have ever met in coaching and one of those people that you remember back as a child was the late Dwayne Clee. I think Dwayne has passed away now, if I'm not mistaken. But one of the greatest human beings ever over there in Terre Haute, Indiana. And he talked, I think, one time about the hot young coach they had over there that was outworking everybody and doing great. And then you did great things at Indiana State University. Growing up in Indianapolis myself, Dwayne Clee, he was one of those guys in tennis. You know, I think we get into tennis, Brian, because of people who impact us when we're younger, and coaches were certainly those people in my life. But I'd like to ask you real quick, your coaching fundamentals. I'm going to go into your resume. That's going to take a while. But your coaching fundamentals, where did you get the nudge to go coach, or where were you impacted and so on? Because you got your degree in political science and stuff, and, you know, I've heard you may have – do you have your law degree too, somebody said? Is that true?
No, I do not. I was studying to go to law school. In fact, just let me correct you. Dwayne is up there, but he's still hanging in there, and I still speak
oh my
to
gosh.
Him quite frequently. I wanted to make sure that the listeners knew that. And he's a special man. You are so right, Chuck. And I know there's so many great people in the sport and around the world. But that man is an ambassador to not only to tennis, but just in life. I mean, what a special person. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, how did you get started? Well, interestingly, I was at Indiana State at the time, and I can remember so well one of my former teammates calling me and saying, you know, look, I know it's August. I was studying for the LSAT. I was just out of college. And he said, you know, you should apply for this opening. And the coach had left and gone to Denver. And I thought to myself, you know, there's no way, I'd ever get hired. But, heck, you know, why not? My wife's getting her doctorate in school psychology. I'm going to be here, and I'll give it a whirl. And I went through the interview process, and, you know, five interviews later, Larry Gallo, who's the number two at North Carolina now, said, you know, look, we'd like to offer you the job. So, like anything else, I figured, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to give my best. I didn't have, any collegiate coaching experience, and we only had three players on the team at the time. So it was me and three guys to start that fall season back in 1996, I think it was. And I gave it my best, and a year later, he brought me into the office, and we went from being picked to finish like 11th in the conference, and we finished third, and we brought some guys in January and had some success. And he said, you know, I just don't think this is going to be able to work. And I said, geez, what did I do? And he said, He said, I don't think you're actually going to be here all that long, Coach. I think you're going to make it. If you want to stay in this game, I really believe that you can coach at the highest level, and I've heard such great feedback. So, you know, people give you some reinforcement. You hang in there and felt good about what was going on, so I hung in there for several years. And then about 5 years later, I had the opportunity to come to the University of Virginia, and I've never looked back.
Let me give you a quick impression of my first impression of you when you got to Virginia. I knew of you because Dwayne Clea, I want to tell us a quick story about him here in a second. But when you went to your first two recruiting trips to Kalamazoo, you were a tireless worker. You stayed there for every match recruiting. And I always had this statement in coaching that with your kids that it's important to keep fog on top of the mountain until they're too high up to turn back. In other words, it's very important to not ever let them know how hard things are or they size things up. I mean, that we get this all the time with players get stagnant. But my impression was this guy is either this damn good or he just doesn't know how the heck the hard it is. He does not know how hard it is because he is going after this stuff like a man possessed. I mean, you stayed there for 2 weeks, and you basically wore out a couple kids to where they finally just came to Virginia and just said, you know, I got to get this kid off my back or this guy off my back. But most people get shut down. They get told no the first time, and they don't keep trying. But, okay, so you're saying that you just didn't know how hard it was going to be. Is that right?
Well, no question. I mean, if you look back almost 20 years ago when I got into coaching, you know, I had no idea. My intention was to go to law school. You know, my father's a judge. My brother attended Harvard Law School, and my sister's a lawyer. So, you know, it was just something that I kind of, you follow in those footsteps, and I was interested in it. And I had an opportunity to coach. And obviously, I played tennis my whole life, junior tennis, college tennis, so on. But I just fell in love with college coaching, and the more I did it, the more I realized what an incredible challenge it was and could be if you really tried to get the most out of your program, and the impact and the responsibility that you have with these young people is enormous. And I think we all need to sometimes stop and realize that everything we say and do and the conduct in which we have every single day has enormous impact on these people you coach and these young men. So, you know, and the longer I've coached, the more I've really just sunk my teeth into wanting to not only develop the best tennis players, but no question, Coach, I believe that we have an opportunity to develop future leaders in this country and their communities and their families and in the country and to make a big impact. So we as coaches are really impacting people that are going to lead the future. And so that's really what I've been so drawn to is the opportunity that we have to make an impact, to build relationships, lifelong relationships. I have such a great, gratifying feeling of seeing my former players out there. I talked to Samdev yesterday. You know, I talked to Michael yesterday, and they're all around playing pro tennis. And then those that are doing other things, just so proud of them and everything we've done. But I think there's nothing like college tennis, the opportunity to develop young men. And how it really does tie in with real-world situations. I mean, there's not a day that goes by that I won't say to one guy or another, look, now let me take this example, and let me give you an example of what it's going to be like 10 years from now and how this relates. And if I allow you to do this, you're not going to be very successful in your company or your family or organization. We have opportunities every single day to give those examples, and it's powerful. So I feel an amazing responsibility and obligation to have this kind of impact. And really, you know, they always say, unless the kids aren't going to care about what you know until they know that you care. And I really do care. I love these kids. I love working with them. I feel I feel so blessed to have the opportunity to coach at this great university, and of course, have the impact. And I really think all of us coaches are so lucky. Sometimes we forget it. You know, we get caught up in, like you said, the wins and the losses and other things. But I've often tried to realize that those things will take care of themselves if you do things the right way.
And you know, it's been a great marriage there, really, at the University of Virginia. It's always been a sleeping giant in many things. The academics are great. It's the number one, I think, public institution for academics in the country, or if it's not the number one, it's always been in the top three in many things. Go back, you know, you've had a tremendous career already. I think that 11 ACC titles already. You know, in the two national championships in singles, two, three doubles, 32 All-Americans, ten ACC championships here. But you finally won the NCAAs last year, and, you know, that was sort of the crowning thing after winning three national indoor tournaments. And I don't know if there's many coaches other than Dick Gould, Ty Lee was up there, that have had a better career. Nobody faster, really, Brian. And, you know, I take my hat off to you for sure. I saw this happening, and you basically kicked us around at Clemson there after, you know, we were able to, you know, get the better end of Virginia for a lot of years. And but I never really hated losing to you quite as much. I can say this really truthfully. You never rubbed it in, and also I saw you busting your rear end working. I never could stand losing to those guys who were sort of just stood on the sidelines and, you know, were the cool guys that, you know, just weren't going to outsweat you. But you've truly brought a blue-collar work ethic to a white-collar environment there at the University of Virginia, and it's been a great, great marriage. The other thing is what dawns upon me, I always used to take pride, too, that Dick Gould and Clemson were turning out more pros than anybody else, really, through our college program. But now you seem to be the only program, one of the only programs out there that players can go and say, hey, listen, he's got a track record of getting kids into the pros, and that is very impacting, you know, as well. And folks, go just Google Brian here. I'm not going to read the 15 pages here. And I'm pumping a little sunshine to you there, man, but you deserve it. And the problem we have in tennis, Brian, is that it is a combative sport, and we do not have a tendency to raise up other people. We seem to be always battling with different ideas and different thoughts, and if somebody's doing a little bit different, we got that sly little condescending remark, and I'm speaking everybody in tennis out there. Do you feel like tennis is harder than other sports as far as to gain respect from your peers? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think that one of the biggest differences in tennis is that these people grow up and the families raise these tennis players, and it's a very me sport. It's very selfish, and I think sometimes instead of looking out for what's best for tennis in general, we're very kind of isolated on our own little islands, and I think that oftentimes interferes with our development as a sport. But that is the way it is, and quite frankly, one of the things I always tell the guys is, you know, we can't be consumed by what others do. We need to focus on setting our own standard, thinking outside the box, and not looking at things as impossible. You know, we can still. I often will tell my AD, I think there's so many things we can still do to raise the bar here to make sure that we're constantly trying to get better. Last year we finished an undefeated 30-0 season, and you know, one of the things I'm most proud of is that we've kept the pedal, you know, the metal of the pedal. We've worked hard to get better, to find ways to get better, to looking for that 1% every day in all things that we do. And I it's not about, you know, constantly being, you know, focused on what others do. We certainly want to learn from others, but we're looking for ways in which we can create things and think outside the box and do things that are positive for ourselves and the sport in general. I mean, I can remember starting back maybe 7-8 years ago, the Open tournaments, where, you know, one of your gripes about just college tennis in general is when they took all those dates away. And, you know, oftentimes there are ways, if you think outside the box, to create more opportunities for your players. And we would do maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 Open tournaments throughout the year. This was probably 7-8 years ago. And instead of, you know, other coaches saying, you know, look, that an opportunity to provide our players more matches and get exposure and improve and get better and have these great practice matches, they often would complain about it, like there was something negative that I was doing to get an advantage that had nothing to do with it. It was just an opportunity to get better that was within the rules. So I think oftentimes we get so fixated on what can't be done rather than what can be done. And, you know, that these rules restrict us rather than, okay, well, let's make sure that we stay within the lines, but at the same time, you know, is there something more we can be doing to develop these kids and provide opportunities and improve the environment and the culture and so on? And I think oftentimes there is if you're working with people and you're thinking outside the box. And I just don't think there's enough of that.
Yeah, I think where we have to come together is have an avenue where we can talk things out and have discussions and get things on to win the war of ideas, really. And you know, I guess the biggest thing again is you never make your own light shine brighter by trying to put other people's out. And I always start at the top of this show by saying, you know, address issues, not people. And I don't have to like you, but by golly, I sure respect the job you've done. And here's one thing, too. You've got 10 ACC Coaches of the Year awards. Now, here's the thing I realized. That's hard when you're winning all the time because usually those awards go to the number two or number three team. So you didn't hack people off or basically piss people off. As bad as a lot of people do when they're starting to climb, Brian, is you got any quick things about that? Because I do want to talk about your entrepreneurial skills here before we go on. But you got anything? How have you risen without pissing everybody off?
Well, I think you try to – and look, I'm not perfect at this by any means, but I think we all need to realize that a lot of people are trying hard. I mean, I'm not the only one out here that's working hard and giving my best and really working hard with my kids and my program. There's a lot of great people out there trying really hard. And there's some coaches within our league. I'll point out one I have a lot of admiration for, quite honestly, since it's so positive, is Kenny Thorne at Georgia Tech. And,
Kenny's
a good man. He's a really good man. And, you know, I remember back in 2004 and 2005 and 2006, we were winning ACC championships. And I had a great conversation with Kenny about this very thing, about making sure that, you know, that I stay humble. That, you know, I actually asked him, am I any different than I was when I came to the ACC, you know? And so, you know, it was interesting just having honest conversation with guys you trust and really can give you a solid evaluation. I think just making sure that, you know, that you don't get too high or too low. You know, we all love to win, and we all hate to lose. But at the same time, it's about making sure that if we want to continue to have success and do the right thing, we have to stay even and humble, just like you do in a, you know, during a match. And I don't think it's any different in life. And so, you know, I'm pretty fortunate that I live with about the most emotionally centered person I know, and my wife Becky, who loves tennis and has completely embraced what I do. She's a school psychologist. She has a doctorate, but her life is really just our four kids and supporting what I do. I'm very blessed in that way, and not every coach has that opportunity. So I realize I'm very blessed, and I feel fortunate for that. And I just think, you know, you have to realize that there's a lot of people trying really hard. I've had a lot of young coaches over the years. You know, someone like you, Chuck, who, you know, when I was having success, you're right, and I'll compliment you for this. I never felt any sense of animosity or jealousy. It was just, look, keep working. You're working hard. I respect what you're doing for the college game. You know, keep pushing these guys and raising the standards. I didn't get a lot of that. I got that from someone like you or Kenny. But there wasn't a lot of people saying, you know, hey, look, you know, keep going. You're doing some great things. And you know, you had spent some time with me. I remember coming to Charlottesville and we'd play ACC matches and we'd have breakfast together. I was like picking your brain. I mean, you've been around the game your entire life. You've devoted your entire life to this game. And you're very sharp and had some great ideas and you were willing to share. And so that's something I want to make sure I do, is I've had some young coaches over the last few years call me and ask for my time. And I know they're trying really, really hard, and they may not have the immediate resources or opportunity, and things don't happen overnight. If it's challenging and hard, it takes time. And you're right, I did have some fair amount of quick success, but it didn't come easy. I mean, it's like anything. If it's worth it, it's challenging. All these things were challenging, both at ISU as well as the University of Virginia. There was a lot of things we had to overcome. And I've had some blessings here at UVA that, you know, maybe at some other school someone else wouldn't have had, even though they're trying just as hard. So I recognize those things. And I think any time we're going to continue to have consistent success, you better stay humble because, you know, getting too full of yourself doesn't get you anywhere. There's too much work to be done and too many challenges ahead.
Well, surely the high horse is a lonely perch, my mama used to say. You can be knocked off of there in a hurry. But that is really, really well said. And I brought this up on the show before, the mentoring that we need in tennis. Everybody needs someone above them that you look up to and get some advice. you're always mentoring other ones, younger ones, but to have a Kenny Thorne or coaches that you reach out to and say, look, hold me accountable to a higher standard. We always said it's a Paul, a Barnabas, a Timothy, people above you, teachers. The Timothys are the people you teach below you, and then the Barnabases are your best friend. We need the Barnabases in tennis, and the jealousy thing is a tough one, you know, in tennis, and to be quite candid, yeah, man, I was jealous of you a lot. I didn't get it done there in the way I wanted to toward the end of my career, and we're getting whipped by Virginia and Duke each, you know. And then, of course, North Carolina is always good, and the competitiveness of that program, you know, all the programs in the ACC is so good. But your blue-collar work ethic with a white-collar mentality, I've always sort of put the label on that. A lot of people who are at a place like Virginia, they don't – it's all right to be smarter than your hound dog. You don't want to have to outrun them. I always said with some of those schools that are just white-collar, white-collar. Blue-collar, blue-collar doesn't cut it either. If you think small and work hard, you don't get it done. You got to think big and work hard, which you've done. So anyhow, Brian, I'd encourage everybody, please, go to website and see these wonderful things you've done. But the things you've done with people, again, it's about leadership training. And your circle of influence more than your circle of concern. Your circle of influence has been those young people right around you and the grooming of leaders. So here's where we're going to go with this. I've got to go to commercial in a minute. But my golly, we do not have a peaceful environment right now in tennis. We have the battles going on in the 10 and under tennis, and with what's going on there, I've never had any skin in the game with 10 and under tennis. But when people said mandated, boy, I had a problem with that being a United States of America citizen. And then we've had problems in junior tennis. With control versus not control. You know, Brian, they've brought in the situation of top-down management with this point system that has really crippled, I think, the ground troops, the entrepreneurs out there, somebody who's built up something in a small environment like South Georgia. You know, maybe it's a coach down there. I always bring up Kingsland, Georgia, where my good friend Dan Vonk is at. You know, they regulate those guys to an L6 or something, L5 or L28. His hard work goes out the window because they're small guys. So we have problem in the junior tennis. In the pro tennis, I don't want to talk about, but my golly, we're all embarrassed sort of about the Davis Cup. And it's just one of those things. We're in coaching. It's hard. It's a hard sport. But then in college tennis, which is our arena, Brian, and this is where I want to go to, we have a civil war going on, and it is. We shouldn't have, but we do. And I think we're – anyhow, I want to get your sort of impression of tennis overall, not any general, but why do we have, am I wrong? Do we not have this going on, or do we have some problems going on right now?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that there's some serious issues out there that need to be addressed and that we certainly need to improve upon if we're going to continue to grow American tennis across the board, and there's some real problems. But I also think we have some great people out there that can help do that, and hopefully, like you said, they'll eventually get on board and start speaking up, because I think there's some I really think that there's nothing that is impossible here in the United States. We have so much opportunity, but in the world of tennis here, we certainly have a tremendous amount of work to do and some real problems that we need to tackle.
Why don't people speak out? I mean, I go down to those meetings, and you were with me down there, and people will have strong opinions the night before drinking a beer and or talking to another coach or something next to a court, but then people don't speak out. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, it happens all the time. I just think it's courage. I mean, that's leadership, right? You know, you have to be willing to have to speak up, and people are just going to disagree with you at times, and you can't be afraid of that. That's what courage is all about. To be a leader, you have to have courage, and you have to be willing to step up and believe and say what you believe and so on. And I, that's one of the things that that I respect about, you know, the effort you made, for example, to get on to the ITA convention. I remember sitting in a recent meeting with some of the top collegiate programs in the country, and one of the most disappointing things for me in sitting in that arena, and I don't think it was the time to address the issues they were, and quite frankly, was that many of those coaches aren't participating enough, you know, and I'll say that out loud. I have no problem saying that. You know, these are the same coaches that really, the issues that are happening within our college game, you know, where, how are we going to address the Sweet 16, or how many do we have too many teams, and how does that impact those that are there year in and year out in Athens or wherever it is that we host the NCAA final site. And there's been so many problems over the years in having 32 teams with the men's and women's there. We have too many people in the house, and it's not a tournament that we're able to run that we can be proud of, and that we can do in a professional way and provide the student-athlete experience that we want to. But the same coaches, Chuck, to go back to your question, is, you know, they don't participate in the process, but they want to determine, you know, they want to have a say in it, and they want to determine what the outcome is. But in order to do that, you got to put the time into it, and you have to speak out, and you have to go to the convention, you have to participate, you have to vote. You know, it's like the same guy that doesn't go to the voting booth, but, you know, wants to talk a lot. So, you know, we have those issues in tennis, like any other line of work, and it's something that I've continued to just do my part. I mean, that's all I can do is get on the operating committee, try to have a voice, because these things are impacting all of us, and most importantly, the student-athletes. So, you know, that's one of the things that I always said. You know, we serve the student-athletes. If we don't have the student-athletes, we don't have a job, and so we need to care about what these young people have to say. And I think sometimes we don't concern ourselves with that enough. I mean, we need to, and you know, you're going back to all the format talk we've had over the last, you know, several months and beyond, it is from the top down. You know, we haven't really, I think, done our part to make sure, what do the student-athletes think? How do they feel? What do they believe? Are they concerned that this match is 3.5 hours long? Are they consumed by the fact that, you know, ESPN's not knocking down their door? I don't get any of that from the student athletes, and I, you know, from talking to them in across different diverse schools, I don't get that sense. I think these kids love the college game. Certainly, they'd like to play in front of more fans, but I think to do that, we need ambitious coaches and coaches that go out there and say, "Look, I can't just sit around and hope someone's going to do these things for me. I want to get after it, and I want to try to create a great environment for my student athletes." And I'm the first one to understand it is easier for me than it is others. But at the same time, I think it's possible for everybody with enough hard work. And we all need to lead within our own programs, and we all need to provide a great environment and culture within our own programs. And that ultimately is what's going to make college tennis flourish. And then be open and honest and share ideas with each other at these different conventions and other places that we have the opportunity to meet, so we can continue to raise the bar. But I think too often you're right, you know, that we just don't have enough people speaking up, and they're not willing to share. We're on our own islands. You know, I that's one of the things I've been pushed to do over the years, and I'm really pleased that I've taken the step to do it. I think I owe it to the game is to voice my opinion, to speak up, to share ideas, to try to make the sport better in general, particularly the college game, which is, you know, obviously my territory, but hopefully tennis in general as well. And I think it's a big issue in tennis in this country, and it's hurting us. And this format that they've proposed, I think they put the cart way before the horse. You know, it's almost a couple entities trying to change college tennis, whether it's the NCAA, the ITA, or the USTA. Everybody has their opinion, and there was really no logical process, in my opinion. Everyone's reacting to somebody else and implementing things without actually allowing a process that is reasonable to take its course. I can remember when I decided to play the ITA indoors this year, I decided and agreed to do that nationally in June, not under the pretext that we would be changing how the game is played. And, you know, to me, that's an important factor, both for, you know, respecting the game, the tradition of the game, the hard work that's put in by so many of these players from a fitness standpoint. They've been led to believe that this is how you play the sport, and this is, you know, you can come to college, and we have this pathway now, and I really believe we're making progress, that these kids are coming to college believing that they can play in Arthur Ashe Stadium someday, and they can play a 3 out of 5, and now we're talking about, you know, playing 5 all sets, or, I mean, the things that were mentioned, if you were down in that same meeting with, you know, we'll start sets at 2 all, and all those ideas are great, but then we kind of force these formats, you know, down people's throats without really, you know, I think going through a really reasonable process that is well thought out. And our
that includes the players. That
is
what you said
is
true.
Yeah, that's my point, is that we didn't survey really a lot of these things. We don't know all the student-athletes. We're just out there, and we're reacting to what some other entity in tennis wanted to do for college tennis. So we're going to react.
Right.
And I think those reactions are just emotional rather than well thought out. And I think that's why we're in the place that we are. And there's a lot of I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed that
we're going to frame this well here in a minute.
Are.
In a minute when we come back from a commercial, and we've got a few callers on the line here that I'm sure they've got questions for you. But you know, I just want to summarize a couple quick things you said there. We never did a survey at the players, and 2 years ago when they started to do something, we had 10,000 signatures on the website, change.org, I think, that some players from the University of Michigan put out, and they went ahead and did what they were going to do anyway. And then sitting through that meeting with you was just, we had a show earlier with Josh Goffey and Randy Blumendahl, and basically we went through the whole thing, folks, but you can go back and listen to that show if you'll go to my website in under the radio shows, chuckcreasy.net. You can get the shows or at UR Tennis. But the problem is that we, you know, this thing was done so much in the back room, and I can say this, you don't have to say all this, but the bottom line is that it had no input from players. The way that they threw it together was really an emotional thing. It was not something well thought out. But here's the biggest thing, Brian, and we go to commercial. The biggest thing is that we are not bigger than the sport of tennis. And how dare us change the sport of tennis around to suit what we think are the whims and the trends of today. We'll be right back with American Tennis and more with Brian Boland. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I want to talk to you about our 2014 Total Tennis Training Camps at the Citadel, at Sumter, South Carolina, at Landrum, South Carolina, in Atlanta this summer. 2014, go to chuckcreasy.net and go to the campsite, and you can see the tennis camps that I will be doing. This is my 38th year doing Total Tennis Training Camps, and you get much more than just learning how to hit forehands and backhands. Our camps have become very inspirational to a lot of kids as we go through the physical part of the game, the mental part of the game, and the emotional part of the game. We put it all together by teaching the kids also how to use the power of momentum when they are on the court. I've been studying momentum since 1979, and I have 8 very important rules that work in all sports that help you learn how to control the most powerful force in sports. ChuckCreasy.net, K-R-I-E-S-E, ChuckCreasy.net, or TotalTennisTraining.com. We'll see you on the court this summer at our Total Tennis Training Camps. Coach Chuck Creasy with American Tennis, and our guest today is Brian Boland, probably now I think one of the 3 or 4 most successful coaches in the history of NCAA tennis, and doing a great job mainly with American players, and I can throw that in there. that now people are saying that if you want to play pro tennis, you can go to about five places in the United States, and the University of Virginia is one of them. And listen, Brian, I wanted to talk with you here a second about what your last statements were, and that is the fact about this meeting that we went to. The whole thing that's been pushed out there this last year, it's all about time. All the matches have to be under 3 hours. It's all about time. And I really believe that this is a ruse. This is really one of the things that politicians do, create one problem, and then they get you to keep take your eye off the ball. And tennis is not about time. I want to tell you the quick story. You know, Dwayne Clee, we talked about him, and I'm so glad to still know. I've got to be able to reach out to him, you know, if you'll get me his address and stuff. But in 1968, he sat and watched me win a high school tennis match. Brian, I won 7-5, 3-6, 2018 in the third set. And he sat there for nearly 4.5 to 5 hours and watched me play a high school match. And then he offered me a chance to get to go to Indiana State. I was going to have to run cross country, play tennis, and I was going to try out for the basketball, but I wasn't good enough to do that. But the bottom line on the thing was that it was 4.5 hours, and it was something I remember to this day. It was the most heroic moment of my my tennis or athletic career. And the point is it was not a 10-point tiebreaker, and it wasn't an abbreviated no-ad scoring. It was because it was 20-18 in the third set. Brian, is it a ruse, this thing about time? Talk about the time element. Is it a ruse or not?
Well, I look back at the reasoning behind what we're doing, and we're talking about, you know, we have 25 days of competition, 18 are dual match dates, okay? So you have 18 days. We're stopping, of those 18, we're stopping matches at four. We're not, unless the other coach just refuses, and then a lot of times we're – So a lot of times we're stopping matches of those 18 days at four, okay? We're looking at maybe playing half of those to complete.
And, well, no. Mitchell and Frank will never finish a match. No.
Exactly.
Mitchell and Frank will never finish a match.
Yeah, and you know, I just find that that kills development. And at the NCAA championships, you really look at us playing UCLA last year. I remember the Pepperdine-Georgia match in Athens. It was some of the most exciting tennis matches and environments I've ever been part of in my life, and I've been to every Grand Slam and every junior tournament. I mean, you talk about excitement. There isn't a sports fan that attended the UCLA-Virginia match last year was sitting there saying, this is much too long. I can't imagine any sports fan that would have even crossed their mind because of the level of excitement and momentum changes and the toughness and endurance and physical and mental persistence. It was amazing. And so I don't think anybody would have said, geez, I wish I could have cut that entertainment off by
an hour. You know,
it's mind-boggling to me.
It's a ruse. It is a farce. We've got a couple callers here. I've got one caller, area code 703-627. Can you come on today and talk to Brian? Do you have any questions, caller?
Hey, Chuck and Brian. It's Hank Harris here. I've known both you guys. You're two of the hardest working guys ever in tennis and college, and you do the most amazing things for these growing young men. And I'm reiterating that whatever you guys are saying about that length of the matches is 100% correct, and I'm just wondering who makes all these decisions, and how come the coaches aren't more involved, because I think we all know what we want and why we train these kids. And also, one last thought is a lot less kids will probably go to college if they know that they're going to get screwed around with all the time by having to play in different formats. If they're trying to become pros, then what are they going to do playing these bizarre formats of matches?
I'd like to say, Hank. Brian, do you know all Hank accolades here, real quick? Do you know that his coaching?
I know Hank. Of course. But you
one of the greatest competitors at the University of Virginia, by the way, coaching on the Pro Tour. What, 6 years, Hank? How many years did you coach on the Pro Tour?
About eight. About 8 years, I coached.
8 years.
Sam's driver.
Yep, and just Hank, thanks very much. I'm going to let Brian answer the question there. We'll get to another call. Please stay on, listen to the show, Hank. We just really appreciate it.
I'm enjoying it.
Go ahead, Brian.
Thanks, Hank, and appreciate all you do for tennis and have done for so long. You know, I think sometimes it's the American way, we want to swallow a pill, you know, and we don't really consider what the real roots of the problem is or how one thing affects another. And you know, again, I believe that we're saying, okay, well, we want to provide a better fan base. We want more entertainment value. To me, the way to do that is work, you know, by changing how our sport is played, and we're going to play 5-all sets, and we're going to play 4-all, all these things that I mentioned, we're going to play tiebreakers for doubles. You know, one super breaker is going to count for NCAA seedings. Like, it's like a flip of a coin. We can just go, how far are we willing to go to put people in the stands? And do we, we talk about how TV is so interested in covering us. Well, we have live video, and do we really... You know, one of the questions I consistently ask through all these meetings is, can we get someone from TV here even to show up to actually explain to us the pros and cons and how does timing affect us? I see it. We can still play baseball for you know, extra innings and go 10, 11 innings, and they're still being covered. Is that really the root of the problem? And we've never had someone in all the meetings.
Brian, stop there a second. Let me jump in there real quick. They didn't even live stream the National Indoors that you just played in Houston. They didn't even have that on. So it wasn't about TV. Let's get that clear.
Well,
it wasn't about
that,
TV.
Not only that, Chuck, let me jump in further. You couldn't have put a couple hundred people in there if you tried. We're the third biggest tournament of the year. I think most people would say that their conference championship, ACC, maybe leaps ahead of the National Indoors. I mean, it depends on how you look at it, but it's
right.
One of the biggest team collegiate events of the year.
Right.
And we're so consumed that we're going to change the way the sport is played so we can provide an opportunity for fans to really get excited.
Even if it was that, we must honor the sport first. And so the real problem is, as you brought up, and can I say it about 32 teams being at the same site? Can I say it,
absolutely.
Or do you want to?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Is it true that 32 teams at the same site in 2012, the NCAA tournament, you started matches at 11 o'clock at night, NCAA officials said, hey, listen, this is outrageous. We're putting together some kind of sideshow here. This is wrong. And it's because we have all 16 men, all 16 women at the same side. By the way, 51-2 vote against that move in 2004, but they did it anyway in 2005. And if I remember right, in 2005 at Stanford, Brian Boland's University of Virginia team in the Final Eight had to go out and play at an indoor club. It was an outdoor tournament. You had to play at an indoor club about 10 o'clock at night, and I gave you holy cane, I think. I said, Brian, you may not get back here as quickly as you think. Now, you did, but you – and then I remember having the same talk with Jerry Simmons years ago. I said, Jerry, you're in the finals of the NCAA. Do not let them push you inside and play indoors now. You're playing Stanford. And I remember, and he says to this day that it – but have I said anything that's not true?
Yeah, I mean, I look back at the NCAA – championships, so I can remember very well, particularly 2012 when UCLA played USC on two courts indoors, and we were playing, we were playing our match against Pepperdine, and both matches on two courts till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, only to then turn around and play the NCAA championship the next day well into the evening.
And these guys jumped on this and said that, hey, it's because of the format and we need to change tennis.
Correct.
It's not. It's basically of what they're trying to do. I've got another caller in line, 864-871. I recognize this caller's number. Chuck Waldron, you're on the line? Chuck Waldron?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, now let me preface this. Brian, this is Chuck Waldron. He's had 105 kids get scholarships from little town of Clinton, South Carolina, where Presbyterian College is at. 105 kids came out of his programs until about 6 years ago, Brian. Now, rural America has produced over 70% of our professional athletes. Places like Clinton, South Carolina, Shelby, North Carolina, French Lick, Indiana produces. These smaller towns produce our champions. Now, Chuck, since they have started the top-down management with the point system, your tennis pretty much as far as being able to put players to a high level has dried up there. Is that correct?
Not completely. We got a good little group coming through right now that I feel real good about, but it has been dry here the last 6-7 years. Yes, sir.
And so that the point system really has hurt a lot instead of the head-to-head system.
Most definitely.
Okay.
Most definitely.
I just wanted to preface, this is a guy that's been in the trenches for a long time, Brian Boland, but we have Brian on the line. You've been listening there, Chuck. Can you have some questions for him about some different things, college tennis and different things?
Well, I just got on about 15 minutes ago, and I agree with everything that both of y'all are saying. I'm old-fashioned, so I'm going to say this. You know, hard work does pay off, and when we take this scoring system the way we have, it definitely hurts what they're trying to do. It's going to hurt our game. And it goes back to the USTA when they got rid of the national rankings for the 12s and the 10s and put them in color groups. And, whenever things like that go about, you're going to pay for it. And as you both know, that we recently have not been able to produce champions out of our college system because things have just changed. You don't get to play like I did in college. We played maybe 55, 60 matches in a year. Now it's down to 22 dates, and
we're stopping them.
When I went to college tennis, it was to go turn pro back in the 70s. It's not that way in America now. So
no,
Go ahead, Brian.
The
one other thing I wanted to bring up was that, we're making a big fuss about this, and rightfully so, and we should. But the other thing is, I wonder, did we make a fuss out of Paul Scarpa's change where we went to changing the emphasis on the doubles?
Well, let's give a history lesson there real quick. I, for 5 years, from about the late 80s to about 91, 92, we tried every format there was, 4-1, 5-1. We tried abbreviated. We'd been doing no ad. Paul Scarpa, we had a biggest, finally stuff came on the table, and we must have had 100 coaches in there, Brian, at the NCAAs in Athens. Paul Scarpa gets up, and when he got up, it was like E.F. Hutton getting up because everybody has so much respect for him. He said, let me tell you, and then he proposed, we can do it this way. Let's play doubles first. Let's only do pro sets, and we'll do 2 out of 3 set matches. Everybody started applauding him. The ITA leadership had no way to go except to do that. Now, we always wanted to call that the Scarpa scoring system, but they had a problem doing that. But Paul Scarpa was the innovator there. And, I had a problem with pro sets, to tell you the truth, guys. 2 out of 3 sets and doubles, I loved the way it used to be, but there was so much, complaining about the length. I never looked at coaching like the length in tennis. Like a golf coach is not going to look at how long a 18 holes takes. But so Scarpa, everybody welcomed that, and it was a good thing for a while. And really everybody knew the problems of no-ad scoring because we had so many players not develop. Brian, people will say people developed in the 80s is because we got to play 80 or 90 matches, too. It wasn't because of no-ad scoring. No-ad scoring is a complete, hybrid mess-up. It's like arena football compared to the others. But go ahead. Brian, what started this up again? Was it the NCAA tournament that caused all this?
I think, yeah. Chuck, I think that's what really ignited the discussion after the 2012 NCAAs in Athens. So instead of saying, okay, look, we have a final fight. I think the danger is now we've gone back, and like you said, you used to play all these matches and provide all these opportunities for development, and it wasn't about how fast you could get it done. It was about what you could do for the student-athletes to provide opportunities. I know, Chuck, you've talked about, can we find ways to play more tournaments rather than dual matches? Last thing we need to do is start finding ways to make this quicker and go from 18 dates of dual matches to 9 and stop half of them. I mean, we're hurting ourselves. We're working against ourselves. So during the regular season, I think we really need to be open-minded about this process. I don't think it should just be, okay, let's look at call the NCAA championships win, and let's assume that the whole regular season has to coincide with that. I think the regular season is an opportunity to really provide opportunities to play matches, to push the kids, to get them fit, and you go play the NCAA championships. But the root of the problem is not the way we keep score. The root of the problem is that we don't have a venue. Look what baseball's done in Omaha, for example, or what softball's done, or what they've actually have great leadership to have somebody go out and generate the revenue and to build in Omaha and to promote in Omaha. I don't.
And they only go there with eight teams. They don't go where there were 32 teams to the College World Series.
Yes, exactly.
We had to call it the Tennis World Series and go there with eight teams. Yeah.
Yeah. The last thing we need to do during the regular season is playing less tennis and doing less development. I mean, we need to find ways to push these kids more, to provide them more opportunities, to get more kids playing, to play more tournaments, not less. We're taking our opportunities away during the regular season. As far as the final site goes, we just need someone that really puts their teeth into it, promotes it, leads it, generates revenue, and gets after it. I really think we can have our own Omaha. You know, the matches they put on at prime time at the NCAA. Georgia Pepperdine, I'll never forget the match. You know, it's unbelievable. What, nobody in that stands of so many thousands are sitting there that day going, wow, this is getting to be over 3 hours. I'm going to leave. No chance. Nobody's
that
doing
is
that.
A R-U-S-E, ruse, if I spelt that the right way. R-U-S-E. Brian, we got about 4 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, we talk about the NCAA student-athlete experience at the final site, and they're right. We just have too many teams. We're playing, you know, these kids maybe think about for a long time, the team's pushing, let's get to Sweet 16, let's get to Sweet 16. To get there, there's so many players. We're playing 9 a.m. matches. There's it doesn't matter if we're on –
no,
we're not promoting
the
sport at 9 a.m. in the morning. And we're playing the national championship match sometimes at noon on Tuesday. I mean, that's
we're giving,
not going to do it.
We're giving participation trophies. We're giving participation trophies for teams to the final site when you got 32 teams there. That's ridiculous that we have 32 teams there. That's the whole deal. Brian, I'm going to give you the last question here, and Chuck Waldron, thanks for coming on there, you know, today. I really appreciate it. Brian, I'm going to give you the last question here. You're in charge of everything now. Okay, let's say you're the czar of tennis in the United States here in college tennis. Give me five things you would do. You got about 2.5 minutes here. Give me five things. Brian Boland's in charge.
Well, I think if you're talking about tennis overall, Chuck, which I'll run with, is number one most important thing we need to do in this country is, and I think they're making great attempts, is to get more rackets and shoes and opportunities with young people. I do like Quick Start. I do. But I think we need to bring it to an even another level. I think we need to let those coaches to development and developing champions, those coaches that have taken their young pupil from the time they're, you know, 7, 8 years old, and they provided a home environment where they can, you know, they're brought up in an environment that's positive for them and they're getting better. As a country, we invest in that environment. We invest in that developmental process because it's working and we don't get ourselves involved in it. And we spend all our expenditures promoting the sport, getting rackets and shoes in young people's hands, getting more people playing. We don't have enough great athletes. You've said this before, Chuck. We don't have enough great athletes playing the game. So
they're in the rural areas.
Absolutely huge. And we can do so much better. But we need people in different regions in this country working on behalf of U.S. tennis, the best leaders and promoters imaginable that will work tirelessly to get tens of thousands. We have one woman in this community by the name of Linda Harrell. I don't think there's a human being that has put more rackets in young people's hands in the last couple of years than Linda Harrell. I'm talking tens of thousands. One person, Chuck, who is ambitious, tireless worker, loves the sport, wants kids to be physically fit, and is making a difference. And there's others out there like her. We need to find them, and we need to get them getting this sport higher profile, more people playing, more people realize how wonderful it is. There's nothing better. In terms of the college game, I think we need to provide more opportunities. I mean, I think we're taking them away rather than providing them. I think we're focused not on the roots of the problem. We're just trying to take the pill and solve the problem. So I think that's something we need to work on in terms of the college game. And I think we need to invest in those areas that are really getting the job done. I'm a big fan of College Park. I think they're doing a great job up there. and four stars produce some amazing players as well. But we need to invest in those that are really creating an environment for these young kids who are developing, and then continue to provide opportunity for them, and not try to control it. You know, I think we need to allow those that are getting it done,
let them run,
invest in them, and trust them, and empower them. And so those are just some ideas I throw out. I'm sure there's so many more, depending on if you're talking about college or junior or professional or whatever. But
yep.
But I do think there's some great people out there. I think they're trying really hard. I think we just need to continue to seek out great leaders in our sport, the people that can really lead, people that are willing to work tirelessly and do whatever it takes to find a way to help build and grow American tennis. There are great leaders in America. We need to find them and get them excited about tennis. They're out there. With leadership, anything's possible, Chuck.
And the great leaders empower those people. The key to power is empowering those under you, which you do, which you have always done, and you're building leaders. And listen, thanks for being on today, Brian.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family. King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Coach Chuck Creasy, and thank you for being with us again this next week at same time, American Tennis at 12. Thanks to Brian Bolin, who's doing a fantastic job in the leadership of young people primarily, and my golly, what a wonder. He's got one of the best careers ever in the history of collegiate tennis and tennis in the United States. And keep remembering that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss, and the key to power is empowering those people under you. So let's do that as well. God bless you. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.